Welcome to the Recruiting Rant Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez, senior analyst for USCFootball.com. The intro song this week, Mean Street, from the album Fair Warning from Van Halen, played by, perhaps, in my humble opinion, the greatest guitar player to ever live, Edward Ludwig Van Halen. Van Halen passed away last week at age 65 due to complications from cancer. While we still mourn the death of a musical icon and innovator, we do bring you some positive news from the USC football recruiting niche in the universe. USC erupted, pun intended, with two verbal commitments over the weekend. USC now coming in at number 6 nationally in the 24/7 Sports composite team recruiting rankings. The Trojans received the commitment of Josh Moore, a safety from Marist High School in Atlanta, Georgia, rated by 24/7 Sports as a 4-star safety, but recruited by USC as a wide receiver. Sunday, the Trojans received the commitment of Michael Trigg, a 6'4", 230-pound 4-star tight end from Carrollwood Day High School in Tampa, Florida. Trigg, although rated as a tight end by 24/7 Sports, does garner some comparisons to former Tampa Plant and USC wide receiver Mike Williams. And while we're updating the class of 2021 for USC, the Trojans also received a commitment from Philip Riley, a 6-foot, 190-pound 4-star cornerback from Valrico, Florida. Riley was committed to Notre Dame, but switched his commitment to USC 2 weeks ago. So without further ado, let's get to the peristyles questions for the Recruiting Rant Podcast this week. Our first question comes from Big Jim Trojan, who says, "You know, I had to hop on this one ASAP. Any progress by USC on Byron Cardwell, the 6'1", 195-pound 4-star running back out of San Diego, California? 2, Corey Foreman, the 5-star defensive end from Corona Centennial? 3, any Oregon O-line commits?" 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Editor Brendan Huffman just recently spoke to Byron Cardwell, and you get the sense that USC is still one of several schools that he's interested in. He has not narrowed his list down of the schools that he's considering. He is, however, thinking about making a commitment January 25th. So he's taking his time. He's going to go through the process. There is a possibility that the NCAA lifts the recruiting dead period and recruits will be able to take official visits at that point. But if that's not the case, then you have to think that the local schools, USC, UCLA, Cal, will have an advantage because at least unofficially, they could get him up to campus. And even if the coaches can't take him on a tour and they can't engage with him, he's still going to have the opportunity to be able to see some of the facilities and just get a vibe for what those schools are about. Now, he hasn't been up to USC since he was in middle school, and that's a little bit of an issue. USC obviously hasn't moved the needle enough for him where he feels like he's got to come up and he's got to unofficially visit USC. But that's true of UCLA as well. So USC still pushing for him, still in communication with him weekly, but you don't get the sense that they've ever really held a special place for him. He's not one of those kids, and having talked to him several times just in the past year, USC's never been a school that inherently was one that he followed as a football fan. When I spoke to Cardwell for the first time back in February at the Under Armour camp, when we talked about childhood favorites, the schools that he mentioned were Texas, Ohio State, the Florida schools. He really never grew up following UCLA or USC. So he doesn't have that inherent love for one of those local schools. I don't think the hometown angle is really going to go very far with him. And maybe that's why he hasn't felt compelled to go up and unofficially visit USC or UCLA. The opposite can be said for Corey Foreman. He grew up a USC fan, his family is full of Trojan fans, and he's very close with several players on the USC football roster. Right now, I'd put USC among Corey Foreman's top three. I think you've got Georgia, LSU, and USC. The order of that top three, I think, changes from week to week. He took an unofficial visit to USC a couple weeks ago, had a very good time. He's still got a couple crystal ball picks to LSU with low confidence. I think he really likes USC. I think he really likes LSU. I think his parents were really impressed with LSU and Baton Rouge. However, LSU is going to struggle this year. And the question is, how much are they going to struggle? And how much does that fan base really believe that Ed Orgeron is the head coach of the future. People forget that before that national championship run they had last year, there were a lot of LSU Tiger fans that questioned whether Ed Orgeron was really head coaching material for that program. So let's say LSU only wins 7 or 8 games this season. They're not going to fire Ed Orgeron after this year, but you do question the trajectory of the football program, and you certainly question the defense and whether Bo Pelini is going to hang around. Because right now, the defense is probably the thing that's the most underwhelming, poorest performing aspect of the football team. Now, having said that, USC has to use this opportunity of having a fall season to be able to impress Corey Foreman. They're not going to get Corey Foreman by default. USC defensively has to go out, has to perform, has to get Foreman excited about playing in that defense and being developed by that defensive staff. If they can do that, they'll land Corey Foreman. As for USC flipping any Oregon offensive line recruits, I'm not very optimistic. I haven't heard anything to lead me to believe that they have any great traction with Bram Walden or Kingsley Suamataia. I know that they're going to continue to recruit both of those players, but at this point, I've heard nothing to suggest that they're wavering away from Oregon. Our next question comes from Rechan, who asks, Gerard, can you go in depth about the recruitments of Corey Foreman, Relique Brown, and Damani Jackson? Relique Brown and Damani Jackson, both juniors from Modern Day High School, Brown a 5'8", 175-pound running back, and Damani Jackson a 5-star cornerback at 6'1", 185 pounds. He asks, are we the leader for all three? Well, we just spoke about Foreman. I think with Damani Jackson, USC does hold a fairly commanding lead. With Relique Brown, it's a bit more complicated. There are more moving parts in his recruitment, but I have been told by a couple good sources that USC is in a very good position for Brown. Now, I haven't spoken to Relique since the summer, and that's really when USC made their big push for him. So I don't know if I would go so far to say that USC is his leader, but I would say USC is certainly among the lead schools in his recruitment. The next question comes from Chris Trevino, who says, in your opinion, what are the biggest three USC recruiting what-ifs of all time? Now, I needed some clarification on what what-ifs meant, and Chris basically said the biggest misses that USC has had. I'd give you four right off the top of my head. DeSean Jackson, Percy Harvin, Vontaze Burfict, and Manti Te'o. You could definitely make an argument that Justin Flo should be on that list as well, make it a top five, but obviously we don't know how good Justin Flo will be in college. With DeSean Jackson, Percy Harvin, Vontaze Burfict, and Manti Te'o, we know all four of those players were very successful players in college, and they were big misses for USC. Jackson would have overlapped with Reggie Bush and taken over the reins as the team's biggest playmaker if he would have signed with USC. USC misses on DeSean Jackson. They have to get Percy Harvin. Percy Harvin on paper becomes the heir apparent to Reggie Bush. USC misses out on Percy Harvin. I remember the day when USC realized they were going to miss out on Percy Harvin. It was the day he announced that he was going to make his college commitment early and not wait till signing day. And I remember USC not being able to get in-home with him, his mom basically freezing out Pete Carroll for that last in-home visit, and that's when they knew they lost on Percy Harvin. With Manti Te'o and Vontaze Burfict, both of those linebackers coming in a year where USC was going to lose Brian Cushing, Ray Maluga, they were going to lose Kaluka Maivea, they were losing Luther Brown, they were losing Clay Matthews, the whole amazing linebacker group that they had was graduating or leaving early for the NFL, and USC had to replace them, and it was the perfect year to replace them because you had Te'o and you had Vontaze Burfict. You had Vontaze Burfict verbally committed earlier in the year, and USC lost him. With Te'o, that was one that played out to the very end, and Te'o shocked them by committing to Notre Dame there right before signing day. And so those were huge losses for USC. And when you look at the teams and you look at what happened, USC was able to make up a bit for the loss of Reggie Bush with other players by committee, but they never really regained that dynamic, explosive playmaker, specifically that playmaker on special teams. And then for defense, you saw how the bottom sort of fell out a bit with that defense when they weren't able to replace those linebackers. And on top of not replacing those linebackers, they also lost some of the guys they actually signed. Guys like Jarvis Jones, who ended up having a neck injury and was not allowed to play at USC because of the medical staff. They wouldn't let him play with that neck injury. He ends up transferring, going to Georgia, ends up being a first-round pick for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The next question comes from Mr. G. Gray, who asks, who is on the target list you cannot see committing even if USC goes undefeated? I don't see USC landing five-star cornerback Nyland Green out of Georgia. And to be honest, I have a hard time seeing USC, even if they go undefeated, landing five-star defensive tackle Mason Smith out of Louisiana. I realize that's a worrisome statement for Trojan fans because Corey Foreman has stated on several occasions that he wants to play with Mason Smith in college. But getting a defensive tackle, a five-star defensive tackle out of the South, let alone out of Louisiana, away from LSU, when Ed Orgeron, a defensive line coach, is the head coach, I find that to be very, very challenging. Never say never in recruiting, but that one is going to be quite the challenge. Even if LSU struggles beyond expectations, let's say they don't even win 7 or 8 games. They only go 500 and they fire Bo Pelini and there's a bunch of turnover with the coaching staff and it gives another school an opening to make a play for Smith. You still got to battle Alabama. You got to battle Texas A&M. You got to battle Georgia. You got to battle the Florida schools. Big time defensive tackles in the Southeast very, very rarely leave the region. Our next question comes from BND1, who asks, in the end, how does the quarterback recruiting play out? Miller Moss and Jake Garcia, Miller Moss and Jackson Dart, or just Miller Moss? Well, even though we make crystal ball predictions for the website, I don't actually have a real crystal ball, so I couldn't tell you how the quarterback position is going to play out for the 2021 class. What I can say is that USC offering Jackson Dart a scholarship, the 6'3", 210-pound three-star quarterback from Draper, Utah, had nothing to do with Jake Garcia. Yes, there have been plenty of rumors that Garcia is wavering, that he's still looking at Miami. But I think with Dart, that scholarship offer comes because you have a quarterback that has thrown for 3,000 yards, 41 touchdowns, and only 2 interceptions in 9 games. And if you watch his film, it's really, really good. And I think this is just one of those situations where USC wants to recruit the best players possible. And you're also talking about a guy with Jackson Dart that's run for 800 yards and something like 15 touchdowns on the ground. So you're getting some mobility there as well. I've often said, I don't like USC going after 2 quarterbacks in a class and having them both be pocket quarterbacks. I think you want a little bit of variation there. If one's a pocket quarterback, fine. That plays towards USC's offensive scheme. But I think in this day and age in college football, you see a lot of success with college quarterbacks who are mobile, who can extend the play, or on a certain situation where it's a 3rd and 3 or 3rd and 4, and you run that mesh read on the read option, he can go keep the ball, gash that defense, and end up getting 20, 30 yards. We saw that with Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold wasn't necessarily a running quarterback, but he was a quarterback that had enough athleticism and was mobile enough that if the defense wasn't playing him honest, he could tuck the ball and run and not only extend drives, but make big plays, make momentum shifting plays. And I think USC has to keep their eyes out for quarterbacks that are capable of giving the offense that variable. Our next question comes from Rebel Trojans, who asks, due to LSU's slow start, any rumblings of Rayshon Davis or Nathaniel Wiggins looking around? I haven't heard too much about USC still being involved with Nathaniel Wiggins as of late. I think right now their focus is really on Sierra Wright, the 6'1", 170-pound, 4-star cornerback out of Loyola High School. With Rayshon Davis, USC's really never stopped being involved with him. He actually took an unofficial visit to USC right before the recruiting dead period, and he's still in constant communication with USC. But as with Corey Foreman, I don't think USC is going to be able to get Rayshon Davis by default. USC is going to have to go out. They're going to have to prove that their scheme can feature the linebacker. Rayshon Davis plays as an edge rusher for modern day. He's an outside linebacker that gets upfield. In USC's scheme, I believe he's an inside linebacker. However, the inside linebackers are constantly going upfield. Much of the quarterback pressure that comes from Todd Orlando's defense, at least from his past defenses, has come from blitzing linebackers and blitzing defensive backs. It's not a defense that is predicated on its front four defensive linemen getting all the pressure on the quarterback. They really like to have sort of a shell game as to who's blitzing, and they move those linebackers a lot, and those inside linebackers almost by standard are blitzing upfield. That's actually a pretty good fit for a linebacker that's only about 6'1", 215, 220 pounds. I think in this day and age, to be an outside linebacker, to play in a lot of these hybrid schemes, you need to be bigger, you need to be longer, you need to be 6'3", 6'4", and be able to reach against those big offensive tackles when you're playing on the edge. So I think with Rayshon Davis, ultimately his ceiling is better playing inside, and because he's a guy that's used to getting upfield and being more of a pass rusher in this particular scheme, he's able to do so. The next question is from Troy in Maine, who asks, do you see a December signing period? If so, who of our targets are waiting until February? Because we don't know if there's going to be an early signing period, it's tough to say what recruits are going to wait to sign their letter of intent until February. My hunch is that there will be a December signing period, for better, for worse. I think the NCAA is just going to sit on its hands and just keep things status quo from that standpoint. In that scenario, the targets that wait to sign until February are most likely the ones that are hell-bent on taking official visits. The ones that are not able to take unofficial visits to USC and to other schools while there's a recruiting shutdown. So we're also thinking maybe in January, February, the NCAA lifts the recruiting dead period, and then targets are allowed to go ahead and officially visit schools. That could definitely push some things back for a lot of players. I think most likely it's going to be those players in California that are already waiting to play their senior seasons in January. So we're talking Rayshon Davis, Ethan Calvert, Corey Foreman, those players that still have their senior seasons ahead of them, and they may just decide, hey, why not wait another month? I can take official visits and not actually sign a letter of intent until February. That's not to say that they won't commit before that point. Obviously, Rayshon Davis is already committed, but we're talking about actually signed and faxed in letter of intent. Possibility, because they're going to wait to play their senior seasons, they may decide they're going to go ahead and wait to sign a letter of intent. I think a lot will hinge on A, there being an early signing period, and B, probably more importantly, whether they project that the NCAA is actually going to lift that dead period and allow them to take official visits in 2021. Now, if official visits are off the table and there is an early signing period, I don't think you're going to see any of those top players wait until February. There's really going to be no reason. They'll go ahead, sign early, and then probably announce commitments at the All-American game in January. And at this point, it sounds like CIF is delaying the season until the third week of January. So those California players would be able to play in the All-American Bowl that first week of January and then basically have a week in between that and the start of their senior seasons. The next question comes from NJ Trojan, who asks, why hasn't Ma'a Nyotiote decommitted yet? And will his spot be filled by Rayshon Davis? I can only speculate as to why he hasn't decommitted yet. The sources that we've spoken with over the past few months are pretty adamant that he's not going to end up as a part of USC's 2021 class. I would think maybe he's a little more marketable as a recruit, as a USC commit, rather than not. And certainly, picking up Rayshon Davis in his place would be a big win for USC. Our next question comes from Mario Fowler. Mario asked, with Brandy Cardwell already in the fold at running back, which guy between Alton McCaskill and Byron Cardwell would be the best complement in the backfield? Also, is it based on offensive scheme or each running back skill set? Thanks, GM. Stylistically, Byron Cardwell and Alton McCaskill aren't all that different. I do think Cardwell is a bit more sudden. He's a bit quicker. And the one thing that I worry about with McCaskill is that he has a real upright running style. He runs very tall through the hole, and you'd like to see him drop his hips a little more, get a little lower, just in case he gets contact in the hole. He might have a better chance of breaking that tackle, being that he's a little lower and he has better leverage. But I do think McCaskill is a decent running back, and I think Cardwell is a very, very good running back. Obviously, with Cardwell, that's a player that you might end up playing against if you don't sign him. He might end up at UCLA. He might end up at Cal. McCaskill is not going to end up at a school that USC is going to play year in and year out. The next question comes from Hawthorne Trojan, who asks, can you speak to the comments by Greg Biggins regarding the Foremans looking to package Corey and his older brother? Is USC willing to effectively use two scholarships to keep the number one player in the country at home? USC has done some of that in the past, but as of late, they stayed away from package deals, mainly because it's come back to bite them. And I think if they don't feel Corey's brother is able to contribute to the team, they don't want to waste his time, and they don't want to waste their own time. Why would you recruit a player if you don't think he can play for your football team? That's not fair to him, and it's obviously not fair to the other players and the other recruits that you're bringing in that need that playing time, that want to get those reps, whether it be in fall camp, spring ball, or during the season. So, no, if they don't think that he can play at that level and can contribute, they're not going to offer him. I know Oregon has offered him a scholarship. I don't know about LSU, perhaps, but with USC right now, they haven't offered him a scholarship. That could change in the future, but at the present date, no. Our next question comes from SC the One, who asks, are there any recruiting surprises that we should be looking for? We know about Calvert, Sierra, Corey, Armitage, Cardwell, and McCaskill as high on our list. But are there any others that you know of that SC may be looking at as plan Bs or transfers in? There are a few players that USC is currently recruiting that are committed to other schools. Now, if I told you who they were, they wouldn't be surprises now, would they? In addition to the known usual suspects that are committed to other schools like Rayshon Davis, who we all know USC continues to recruit, who's committed to LSU, USC is also involved with the receiver and another linebacker that are committed to other schools. The next question comes from BigNick21USC, who asks, what's the situation with the two elite SoCal quarterbacks for the 2022 class since we took Devin Brown out of Arizona? Kind of weird. At this point, it looks like Malik Murphy, the 6'4", 220-pound pro-style quarterback at a Gardena-Serra High School, is going elsewhere. It doesn't seem like USC is very involved with him, and it looks like he's considering other schools. With A.J. Duffy, it's interesting because A.J. Duffy spoke to the USC coaching staff after Devin Brown committed, and USC said they would take two quarterbacks in the 2022 class if A.J. Duffy wanted to commit. Right now, I believe Duffy is leaning elsewhere. That's partially because USC took Devin Brown, but USC, again, is still in contact with him, and they are still recruiting him. It's just interesting that they took Brown and they didn't necessarily give Duffy a heads up about that beforehand. LGT Third comes in with our next question, which sometimes to me reads like lizard. I want to say lizard. I know it's not lizard, but it reads like lizard. LG asks, how is the 2022 recruiting cycle looking for offensive linemen out west? And are the coaches making any headway with any of the top players to stop the flow of elite kids to Oregon? If you get a chance, go to the ... pull down menu at the top of the site and you'll be able to access the 2022 target list, which will list all the offensive linemen that have eye interest in USC right now. USC's offered something like two dozen, maybe a little more offensive linemen in the 2022 class. So you've got players like Ernest Green, 6'4", 330-pound offensive guard from St. John Bosco High School with high interest in USC. Players like Malik Agbo, who's 6'6", 295 pounds, an offensive tackle from Federal Way, Washington, with high interest in USC. Dylan Lopez, a 6'2", 275-pound offensive center who has high interest in USC. Now, Lopez is the teammate of A.J. Duffy at Rancho Verde High School, so it's going to be interesting to see that USC has maybe gone in a different direction at quarterback if that's going to affect the recruitment of Dylan Lopez. Prior to Devin Brown's commitment, you would have thought USC would have recruited Lopez in order to get A.J. Duffy, but now it might be the other way around. The next question comes from David Law, who asked, how important was the Miller-Moss hosted weekend? And are there any details about the weekend we haven't heard yet? And the reverse of a question above, who are we only going to get if we do go undefeated? Again, I don't have a real crystal ball. I can't project what the class is going to look like in December, January, or even February. I can say that the recruits that are on the target list right now, listed at having high interest in USC, I believe USC, if they go undefeated, will get all of those recruits. That includes Corey Foreman. That includes Ethan Calvert. That includes Sierra Wright. The only tidbit that was interesting about the weekend with Miller Moss, which it was a huge weekend, was that Sierra Wright actually didn't make it to campus for the unofficial visit. I was told, or at least I was given the impression, that Sierra Wright actually made the campus tour along with Miller Moss, Michael Trigg, and Corey Foreman. But from what Sierra Wright told Greg Biggins earlier this week, he actually didn't make the unofficial visit. Still, it sounds like USC has maybe opened up that lead just a little bit more than they had. I think it's still close. Oregon is still involved. I believe Washington and Stanford are still involved. Notre Dame is still recruiting him. But obviously, if there's only going to be unofficial visits and Sierra Wright can't take official visits, those schools that he's seen locally are really going to be the schools that are going to have a commanding lead as he gets closer to making a potential decision. And with Sierra Wright, he's one of those kids that we just don't know when he's going to make that decision. Publicly, he has stated January, but I've heard from a couple sources he could potentially pop before then. So we're waiting to see what happens with Sierra Wright. I think if he was to commit tomorrow, he would commit to USC. Speaking of commitments, our next question comes from Silent Commit. He asked, what is your confidence level number on Corey and Mason Smith being a package deal? That's a good question. Corey Foreman, the package deal recruit. Take his brother and then take Mason Smith as well. Obviously, USC would love to take Mason Smith. If you're asking for my confidence level that Corey Foreman and Mason Smith end up a package deal at USC, it would be very low. It would be at like a 2, maybe a 3. If you're asking me just in general, do I think Corey Foreman and Mason Smith will go to the same school together? That's higher. I think it's potentially like a 6. Package deals usually don't work out, but they've talked about it a lot. They have been to LSU together. Mason Smith has yet to take an unofficial visit to USC. There were rumors that he was actually going to make it out that weekend with Miller Moss, Sierra Wright, and Michael Trigg, but that didn't happen. That could still potentially happen, but yeah, when it comes to USC and a package deal with Corey Foreman and Mason Smith, I'm not very optimistic that's a realistic scenario for USC. Package deal-wise, USC wants to make the package deal that's a proven winner, and that's Corey Foreman and Drake Jackson playing together on defense. Green Trojan asks our next question. Is USC finished with wide receiver recruiting? Would USC still take Keon Coleman? Coleman, a 6'4", 200-pound, 4-star wide receiver from Opelousas, Louisiana. USC offered Coleman, I think, about a day or two before Josh Moore committed to the Trojans. And then you had Michael Trigg commit to the Trojans. I don't think USC is necessarily done with recruiting receivers. You have to remember that Quadarius Davis is still considered a soft verbal commitment to USC. There's always the potential that he ends up somewhere else. And I think with USC, they're open to continuing to recruit players like Bo Collins as well and looking for the best players available. So I don't think you necessarily stop recruiting all other wide receivers. I think USC is still in the market for receivers. Do I think they're going to take more than 3 receivers in this class? Probably not. I think 3 is the number they want, but who those 3 are is going to depend on what players at the end of the year want to consider them. If we're talking about an undefeated USC and we're talking about an offense that puts up crazy numbers, yeah, they may still be involved with the Bo Collins, who decides maybe he wants to stay closer to home. And if USC has a shot at him, I think they're going to make room for Bo Collins and maybe some other players that they're still recruiting that are committed to other schools. Our next question comes from Trojan Tito 66, who has 2 questions. First, Tywin Malone or Mason Smith? Who has a higher chance of maybe going to USC? Right now, I would say Tywin Malone. There's a chance that he might come out here for an unofficial visit, coming from Orondale, New Jersey, home of Brian Cushing. USC's probably in his top three right now, so I would definitely say Malone, USC has the better chance at. Tito's second question is, how have you been? Well, as some of you guys know, I threw my shoulder out a couple weeks ago. I don't think it's going to be 100% until I see a doctor, probably an orthopedic surgeon. I'm trying to delay that as long as possible, trying to stay out of doctor offices and hospitals. So maybe we get a vaccine here in a couple months, cross your fingers, and I can go get it checked out. It's been a bit of a bummer. It's definitely changed my workout routine a bit. I'm doing a lot more cardio. But in the grand scheme of things, it's first world problems. I do appreciate you asking, Tito. The next question comes from Trojan53, who asks, anything new on the Jake Garcia front, given the fact that another 2021 quarterback offer is out there? Nothing really new on the Garcia front. He is going to be in Southern California this weekend to get some work in with his offseason quarterback coach. Talked a little bit about that in the war room. And as we also talked about in the war room, Jackson Dart's scholarship offer really has nothing to do with Jake Garcia. USC could possibly potentially take three quarterbacks in the 2021 class. I don't think that's going to happen, but they like Jackson Dart. They're pursuing Jackson Dart. They like Jake Garcia. They like Miller Moss. They want to keep both of those quarterbacks. Daddle15 comes in with our next question. Outside of Foreman, who would you say is the most important remaining target on SC's board? I think that would be between Byron Cardwell, the four-star running back out of San Diego Morse High School, and Ethan Calvert, the 6'3", four-star linebacker out of Oaks Christian. I'd lean towards saying Cardwell because I think running back depth is crucial for USC going forward. Maybe not next year because you have that extra year of eligibility for Carr and Vi Melapai, but by the 2022 season, one of those running backs from the 2021 class is going to have to contribute some pretty important minutes. And so I think it's vital for them to be able to get two solid running backs in this class, and Cardwell is the best on the board. Calvert becomes more important just recently because Solomon Tuliahupupu is no longer projected to be a guy that's going to play in the next couple years. I mean, he's got a knee injury. He's just coming off the foot surgery, which was something that has plagued him since he's come out of high school. The linebacker position is not looking as strong as it once did. And so a guy like Calvert coming in and being able to play minutes early, and I think he's one of those few players that is still on USC's board that actually could play as a true freshman and could push for playing time as a true freshman. I think he's that good. I think he's that athletic. I think he's that smart. And I think in the system that Todd Orlando runs, he's a guy that could contribute early. So it'd come down to those two players. I sort of lean towards Cardwell, but like I said, I think Calvert, now looking at the depth chart and with everything we know about opted out players and injuries, I think he's going to be pretty big too. Our next question comes from Gate Call, who asks, is the staff working to flip an offensive lineman who committed somewhere else? Any hope of it amounting to anything? USC is still recruiting Bram Walden, the 6'4", 270-pound, four-star offensive tackle out of Arizona who's committed to Oregon. And they're also continuing to recruit Kingsley Suomatia, the 6'5", 285-pound, four-star offensive tackle from Orem, Utah, also committed to Oregon. I don't think USC has a good chance at flipping either player at the present date, but that doesn't mean that USC shouldn't still try. The offensive line class is pretty much set. You're just looking for that player to add in that can be a early contributor. Because as it stands right now, it doesn't look like USC's class has anyone that's going to be able to compete for a starting job right out of the gates. It's very hard, especially when you're talking about left tackle, to have a player that's a freshman come in right away and start. But I think of the group they have now, it's a good solid group, but it's a group that's going to need some development and some time. Potentially, if you get a guy like Kingsley Suomatia specifically, he might be able to come in and compete for a starting job right away at USC. So there's really no reason not to continue to have dialogue with him, continue to push. Over the years, I've seen persistence and relentlessness come in and be a huge factor in flipping recruits, because you don't know what kind of season Oregon's going to have, and you don't know what kind of season USC's going to have. Bovard74 has our next question and asked, you said in previous Recruiting Rant podcast that athletic director Mike Bone wants to build the football program from the ground up. Please explain what that means. Is Helton involved in the big picture, if at all? Thanks. Well, to put this in context, this conversation is in a post-Clay Helton world. So this is within the context that USC decides they're going to make a change at head coach, and they are going to take one of several different approaches to hiring a new head coach. At that point, I don't see USC going after the big splash hire, Urban Meyer, Bob Stoops, someone of that ilk. I see them going for an established head coach, but a head coach that the administration can put their stamp on, a head coach that the athletic department can build around, rather than a head coach who steps in and wants to gut the athletic department and bring in his own people from top to bottom. For a guy like Urban Meyer to get hired, boosters would have to step in and take over the coaching search. I don't see that happening, and I think this athletic department with Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna is much more active, and they're going to be very involved in the coach search process. And so they'll have a checklist. I don't know what that checklist will look like, but they're going to want to check off certain boxes, and I think they're going to want to engage and find a coach that they can work with rather than a big name that's going to come in and dictate how things are run in the football program. The other factor you have to consider here is money. USC has made some bad business decisions over the past few decades, and we've heard that resonate from the athletic department. So again, I think that's going to drive Mike Bone to find his guy rather than everybody's guy. Our next question is from R5 Vasquez, who asks, we've read in previous articles that the staff is pursuing Rayshon Davis and in the mix for Ethan Calvert. But with recent injuries at the linebacker position, does the staff expand its linebackers recruiting to other guys not currently linked to the Trojans for more depth? Any names to look out for? No names to share right now, but USC is involved with some other linebackers that are committed to other schools, including Rayshon Davis. I think the interesting thing with the California season not starting until January, it is going to extend the evaluation period, and linebacker is one of those positions that you can find some players that end up developing their senior year, and they're guys that you want to go after. You also have to remember that the portal is just a click away, and linebacker, wide receiver, those are two positions where you can find pretty good talent, certainly if you're just looking for depth in the transfer portal. So that's another option that USC will have. They're not hurting too bad for linebacker depth. I think it definitely does make them consider bringing in an extra linebacker, but I don't think it's necessarily a must. Our next question comes from Mix, who asks, is the staff in favor of taller quarterbacks, thus taking the commitment of Brown, being Devin Brown, over AJ Duffy? Rapid fire answer, no. I don't think it has anything to do with height. I think it has to do with Devin Brown being more of a pocket quarterback. I think Clay Helton prefers pocket quarterbacks. I've been told as much from coaches on prior staffs. Our next question comes from H2 Augie, who says, hey Gerald, now that USC has 22 commitments, how do you see their recruiting tactics going forward with taking commits? Are there still one or two current commits that you feel won't be Trojans come signing day? How many rides do we have left? Thanks. I do still expect at least one decommitment from the class of 2021. In terms of the overall number for the class, I think USC is working between 25 and 27 signings by the time we get to February. You have to look at the opted out players possibly transferring. You have to look at the injuries, and when you have reoccurring injuries with players, is there a chance that you have a medical retirement? There's a lot of attrition possible within that group, and so I think USC for sure has a full class that they're going to sign in 2021, but I think now we're back to thinking they may oversign and end up with 26 or 27 signed prospects at the end of the day. Priester comes in with the next question Not sure I understand how many letter of intents USC can accept. I was under the impression 25 is the max. I realized they have more rides available than 25, but I thought that is the max number. I mentioned because there are 4 to 5 must-gets still hanging out there, and USC has 22 commits now. So this is a good follow-up question to the last question we just answered. You can sign more than 25 prospects in a class as long as you have some of those prospects as early enrollees, because then you can count those prospects towards the previous class. It still comes down to initial counters, so that number can be jostled around a bit, and you still do have the opportunity to blue shirt, but really it comes down more to which class those players are counting towards based on when they're actually enrolling. So USC can sign more than 25 in the 2021 class. The next question comes from Amy USC, who says, GM, if USC were to garner the signatures of several more highly rated recruits, what current verbals might be dropped or ushered elsewhere? Well, I don't think we want to get into talking about what recruits could potentially have their scholarships stripped in order to make room for better players. I think that's probably not a subject worth broaching. If the class changes and evolves over the course of the year, we'll keep you updated. The next question is from David Law, who says, new page, new question. How confident should we be about Ethan Calvert? Does UCLA pose a big threat to us for a signature? Right now, my confidence level on the crystal ball scale is 7, I believe. It could be a little higher than that. I think UCLA is a contender for him, a threat. Of course, until he signs a letter of intent, every school that he considers can still be a threat. Utah, UCLA, even Washington. But I think right now USC holds a pretty commanding lead. I think a lot weighs on him getting on campus again and seeing the new defense. The next question is from P. Polly, who asks, Jim, although I've had disagreements with Dan Weber, I always thought he was a smart guy. He is a smart guy. Have you any stories about Dan and his feelings on recruiting last year and this year? Just asking. Not really. Most of the time when I saw Dan, it was at practice. So when you're at practice, you're talking about the team. You're talking about what's happening. You're trying to observe. You're trying to take in as much information as possible through those observations and making sure that the story that's coming out, whether it be for interviews or the actual practice report, is as accurate and as informative as possible. So recruiting is such a dark hole. There's so many new names every year. There's so many weird subplots and sources and things that go on. If you're dealing with the team and you're focused as a team beat guy, you really don't want to venture too far into that dark end of the pool, which is recruiting. But I will say the most enjoyable experience working with Dan definitely came when we were working on the Todd McNair case file, which dropped right after the NCAA leveled sanctions on USC. And so that process of developing sources and going through the case file and going through such a layered, complicated story, I learned a lot. And it was really a lot of fun just to watch Dan and to, you know, be involved with that sort of behind the scenes. And I'll always remember that. And Dan was just awesome to work with. And I think he will be missed. And hopefully he sticks around a little bit and maybe does some cameos here and there. Definitely understand in his position, kind of stepping away from the site a little bit. And man, if you're going to do it, this would be the year, right? The next question is from Ali for USC. He asks, in regards to recruiting as it pertains to roster management, due to COVID-19, do all players receive an extra year of eligibility or just who are in their last year of eligibility? From what I understand, all players across the board get an extra year. Mike Gogues has our next question, and he asks, what was the thought process on the slimming down of Drake Jackson? Aren't rush defensive ends able to make more money in the NFL than outside linebackers? Who would be Drake's comparison in the NFL at 275, be compared to 245. I think you mean as opposed to 245 pounds. The rest of the question reads, and the reason for this question is, how does the slimming down of Jackson have a positive or negative impact on the recruitment of Corey Foreman? To be perfectly honest, the first part of the question, I don't have an answer for. I think Drake Jackson is a terrific athlete. I think he's got a future in the NFL, but I also think he's naturally a better pass rusher with his hand on the ground. How that impacts Corey Foreman is really twofold. The con is that Drake Jackson will actually be playing the position that USC is recruiting Corey Foreman for, and he will be there when Corey Foreman is a freshman, which then you would argue, well, how is Corey Foreman supposed to play as a true freshman if Drake Jackson is playing the position he's projected to play? Again, I'm not sure. But then as a positive, Drake Jackson playing well and developing and being successful in and of itself will help attract Corey Foreman to the defense. Now, ultimately, I would think Drake Jackson would put on weight and would actually move back to the defensive line. Again, I think that's where his ceiling is the highest. Corey Foreman actually athletically plays that hybrid position probably a little better. I don't know that that's ultimately his best position. We're talking long-term potential, but I think he could definitely play that position at USC. Now, this could all change if we actually see USC in game and they're running a different defense than we expect or project. We're making some assumptions based on small video clips, and we don't really have the full picture because we haven't been able to observe practice. Our next question comes from Pucks19, who asks, Gerard, on the recruiting front, which five-star can you see USC recruiting guru Ryan Abraham bring in to replace our stud left tackle Dan Weber, who's decided to move on to a much-deserved semi-retirement and other life endeavors? Thanks. I'll hang up and listen to your response. Fight on from Otto in Oberlin. I have some opinions on that, but they're kind of in-house. I think we're going to have to wait and see. Obviously, this season is a strange year, and I think we're probably going to have to get into next spring, into next summer, before we can really seriously sit down and start talking about that. The next question is from Six Brave Bulls, who asks, who does USC like at Playa del Rey St. Bernards? Again, I would refer you guys to the target list. All that information is there. But off the top of my head, I know USC has offered a scholarship to junior running back Jalen Thompson. The real big fish out of St. Bernards is going to be Larry Turner Gooden. Remember that name. He's a four-star, ranked the number five athlete nationally right now. Safety slash wide receiver, 6 foot, 185 pounds. Has pretty high interest in USC. Was coached by Chris Claiborne when he was at Calabasas. He's a four-star right now, but I think he has five-star potential. And for the final question of the podcast, Medicab01 asks, you mentioned in the past that Tim Drevno looks for particular traits in his linemen. What were those traits? Which traits do current linemen on the roster have? Drevno likes blue feet. Blue feet are described as quick feet, feet that create balance and can create leverage. I think Drevno also likes big-bodied offensive linemen. Don't think he likes the shorter, quicker offensive linemen. And it's interesting because originally in that 2020 class, it looked like USC was going to recruit some of those undersized, tall offensive linemen, the 260, 270-pound range offensive tackles. But that changed quick. USC's 2020 class got big in a hurry, and they ended up signing a few guys that were well over 300 pounds. So I think you're talking about quick feet, you're talking about size, you're talking about length, and I think across the board, even at the interior, you're going to see them go after guys that are in that 6'5", 6'6", range. That's going to do it for this week's Recruiting Rant podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez. You can always follow up with me on The Peristyle or at GMART Live on Twitter. As always, stay tuned to USCFootball.com for the best in Trojans athletics and recruiting.